Welcome to SestraCast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm rewatching this series for the third time. My co-host, Kathy Campbell, is watching for the first time, and so we make sure not to spoil any storylines before the episode we are currently discussing, which is very difficult these days because we're on episode 5, season 5, and we're almost done. So, Kathy, how's it going this week?
Oh, it's going good. And this, I cannot believe we're halfway through season 5.
Like, I know.
We're almost at the end. I am so excited to be done with the show so I can then go through all of the fun Clone Club stuff.
Yeah.
Because I'm really, like, it's so difficult being spoiler-free now that we're close to when the final season aired.
Yeah.
So it's more present in things.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, I've been noticing that too. Like every time I look at something, I'm like, ooh, I hope Kathy doesn't see that.
Yeah. And so I have to be very careful, like on YouTube. And yeah, I'm very excited to be done with that so that I can, you know, don't have to worry about those spoilers. However, yeah. I'm very sad to be done with the podcast and not be able to talk to you every week. But you know what?
I think we'll still talk.
Yeah,
I think we will. We just won't record it. It'll be like the same thing.
Exactly.
So today we're talking about the episode 5 from season 5, which is titled Ease for Idle Millionaires, which I mentioned last week was the title coming up. I didn't realize it was the next episode coming, as all the titles do this season, from Ella Wheeler Wilcox's poem Protest. And I'm just going to read that whole quote again because it gives me such chills and I just love this poem, which is talking about how we may criticize oppression and condemn the lawlessness of wealth-protecting laws that let the children and the childbearers toil to purchase ease for idle millionaires. And we know who they're talking about, too.
Yes.
And he's awfully idle, and he's just a creepo.
Yeah,
Mr. P.T. Westmoreland, who features big time in this episode.
Yeah, this was a very strong P.T. episode, and I always felt a little bit of the heebie-jeebies with him as a character. That's just kind of like the default for his person.
Yeah.
But this episode really pushed it even harder, deeper into the different, like,
I know. It's like we finally find out just like how really awful he is. We already kind of knew it, or maybe we don't find exactly how awful he is, but we find out he is definitely awful. He is no friend of humanity.
No.
But yeah, so like this episode, it mostly takes part in the revival community and also PT's house and what's going on there. And then there's a bit of Sarah, Kira, and Mrs. S sorting things out. So I think we should just talk through
we can talk through
the revival bit, and then, you know, when it's appropriate, just swing back to the North American location, wherever that is.
And
all right.
Yeah. So I mean, we start out deep in revival world. Cosima is working on that tooth. You know, she's going to run all of her science-y test things. And it's cross with a guy out in the woods, who is going to dig something up. Turns out it's contraband cigarettes.
Yeah, I love that, by the way.
Which was
as a former smoker, I'm like, yes, I would totally want to have like a little stash of smokes in the woods.
Well, and it adds that extra layer of, so obviously Revival is a cult. It's this very cult atmosphere, restrictions on everything, et cetera, et cetera. And so the fact that somebody's going out and has this contraband shows how not as strong the cult is. It's crossing back and forth, and Cassima's running tests, and then the guy out there hears like noises and gets nervous. Here comes the monster. He gets attacked.
It was so like classic horror story trope, and the guy really sold it with his scream.
Yes. Yeah. And on top of that, Cassima gets information from the DNA that has the same copyright that her DNA is. And then it flashes into a third little scene where it's back in time when Delphine and Cassima found her copyright information. And this is going to be very poignant in the future, but it ends up being a dream. And it's the dream of when they're like talking about how Delphine is always going to protect her and that they own her, but not her integrity or her intellect or her humor. Like this very intimate moment between the two of them, where Cassima wants to, Delphine wants Cassima to defy them so that they don't own her. And it's very, very emotional and very poignant, especially their relationship that they've had has been so up and down and so strong still. And of course, they still have their issues and problems from the outside sources, but it reminded me how much I love them as a couple. And then Cassima wakes up and like wipes the drool off her face because there's people outside. Something happened, basically. And of course, we know what that something was because it's flashing through the same period of time, but it cuts to the credits before you learn. It's very dramatic, very old school horror story type of a thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, when Delphine was shot at the end of season three, that broke a lot of people's hearts. And this is why, because, you know, Delphine and Cassima together were very endearing to a lot of the audience. And I think I'm glad they brought her back. And I'm also glad that they're reminding us why she's an important character.
Yeah. A lot of times a show will have, oh, look, we have two lesbians. Look at how woke we are type of a thing. And this has never felt like that. It never felt like they were pandering to the audience or anything like that. Their relationship, you have that chemistry. You want them to succeed as a couple through whatever they're going through, which is really, it's really powerful. I love that. And then after the credits, we learn, as Cassima learns, about the quote unquote bear.
The bear.
What's going on.
It's a bear.
And you're finding more cracks in Revival. Because the people know that it's not a bear. Right. They're fully aware of it. They get it. And they're tired of being lied to that it's a bear. And so once again, it's another crack in this cult, in addition to the cigarettes that were being hidden. But like, they're going to go out and get this bear. Everyone else is on lockdown. Yeah. Like, they're.
No, it's pretty amazing. Like, how they go into like, you know, military mode so quickly, like that, you know, you thought they were just like a commune of like, you know, people who shared the belief in some fountain of youth. And then you see the underside, which you always end up seeing of a community like that, which is, we're going to keep order and you all are on lockdown.
Yeah. And I don't care what you think. You don't need to know any more information. Just stay safe for your own good, type of a thing.
Yeah.
And Cassima is not having any of it, obviously, because it's Cassima. Yeah. And she sees Aisha and is like, oh, hey, let's examine her. Because she looked like she was doing better. She had so much more energy and she had that childlike aura around her because she was super excited. And Kasuma's mm-hmm. like, oh, hey, I want to examine you because you're feeling better. Let's find out, because Kasuma's very much about the science. She's going to find out what's going on. Naisha talks to her about how she is feeling better. She got fountain water and has this great little book that's tracking her symptoms and how she's feeling and her medications and all of that. With cute little smiley faces, which was so cute. Was like,
yeah. They're really good at like publishing the children-oriented literature that Revival.
Yeah, well, and not only that, like that's a legitimately fantastic way to track how a child is feeling if they can't, mm-hmm. without the stress of making sure you write the words correctly or finding those right words in your vocabulary, because as a child, there's a lot of pressure in that. And I know that's something that I've dealt with my daughter, is that like, and that's part of it, like their creative writing practice is making sure that they can find the right words and really expand and expound on that. But for someone that was sick and now is in Revival, where it's a whole different type of literature, obviously creative writing is not specifically something that they're going to be talking about. And so it was really nice to see that they have different ways for their children to talk about how they're feeling. Yeah. That was cool.
If only it wasn't some creepy experience.
Right. Right. It would be so great. So Kasuma grabs that book though. Then is this where the messenger comes in and tells them
yes, at that point, that's where the messenger had said to Aisha,
that's right.
When she asked Aisha, can I examine you? And Aisha says, well, the messenger says you're not supposed to. And, you know, Kasuma, with her good way with children, she's like, yeah, he's such a grumpy Gus.
Yeah.
And, you know, is it okay? And so that's when, you know, she examines her. She must take some samples from her, right? And then takes the journal and goes off to her, back to her lab. But yeah. You know, that's next, like, is when, you know, they're saying like, okay, sentries every 50 yards and guards will, you know, do this and dogs and guns. And it's like, in Revival, you know, trying to track down this quote unquote bear.
Right.
And, Kasuma sees Mud, and Mud is like, I can't talk to you. I can't tell you what's going on, but I will tell you, there's a lot of VIPs at the big house, so keep your head down.
Yes. And Mud is going to go with a group. She's going to go out on the perimeter to try and calm down the bear, quote unquote bear.
Yep.
Obviously, not a bear. And Mud's going to use that relationship. Like, they know that Mud has whatever relationship that she might have with them. And so they're making sure that she is with them. Because they want to capture, not kill. But after that comment from Mud about the VIPs in the big house, Kasuma sees Delphine walking up the stairs.
Yes.
And is like, wait a second. What are you doing up there? Tries to chase her, but gets forced back into lockdown, which is heartbreaking for her. But that's fine. You know what? She's going to work through it the way that she needs to.
Yes. She's going to let Delphine have
it. Exactly.
I did read somewhere in like, you know, one of the producers like notes about this, that particular scene of Delphine going up the stairs was filmed with a Delphine stand-in, because Evelyne Brochu was already in another show at that point, and they needed to film that right then. So they just did this behind the back shot of her. But later she was available for the rest of this
That's
show
awesome.
Because she obviously has a big role in it. But this time I'm looking at her going like, as long as you get the hair right, I'm willing to take it to Delphine.
Well, and it's funny because I didn't recognize that it was Delphine at first.
Okay. Interesting.
Until Kasuma's reaction, basically. Then I was like, it must be Delphine. And then And it took me a second too to realize, because the next scene is Rachel with PT. And so I was like, oh, maybe it was Rachel that, no, that's not Rachel. And I just kind of put it out of my head until I realized that it was Delphine when she gets called in.
Interesting.
So that, I thought that was really interesting, how my brain worked with that. But Rachel is meeting with PT and she's so glad to be home. And because Rachel was out, presumably at Dyad, running the tests with Kira.
The Kira stuff.
All of that stuff.
She's all like happy, which is, but we are like disturbed by her happiness because we know it's based on something that is really creepy.
Yeah, it's not a good sign when Rachel is happy. Let's just be honest there. someone's going to probably be hurting. And so we just have kind of a reunion meeting with Rachel and PT as they like pass on the information for whatever it is she's doing. Is this where? No, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, there's other stuff going on, but, you know, it is quite a woven story this time, where it's like, let's have two lines with these people and two lines with these people, and then let's go back to the other people. And the Rachel PT line, you know, the next thing you see is PT giving Rachel a shot, very close up. So for those who find that a little, you know,
squidgy,
creepy looking, squidgy. I mean, you've already watched it if you're listening to this podcast, but we feel for you.
Yes.
And that's when Rachel tells him that 1,300 surrogates have been selected. Yeah. And that's like, what the heck?
That's a lot.
You know, and are getting hormone treatments, you know, to get them ready for implantation. So, of course, I thought of you.
Yes. Well, and I'm so glad you talked about that, because with Helena, it was just like suddenly she's ready. And I'm like, that's not how that works. But I'm glad that they pulled that around. Been there, done that. Lots of butt shots. Not fun.
How do they talk 1,300 women into doing that without like explaining why?
Money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably a big part of it. And you know, if they talk about all of these, like, who knows what the sales thing was, but
the sales pitch.
I'm assuming it's not all in one location. I'm guessing that they used a lot of the Neolution network to grow that, and a lot of Neolutionists. It would be easy for them to say, hey, let's, you know, bring on this awesomeness for things. And
And, you know, as PT's giving her that shot, he says something like, you know, you deserve Cosima's cure most of all, Rachel, more than any of them. Like, Rachel is, you know, exalted among clones. And Rachel has this look on her face. You can tell she's like, this is where I belong, where I am treated special. And I am not like my clone, you know, sisters. I won't even think of them as sisters. They are just experiments, but not me.
Yes. And this is just a reaffirmation of something that's more blatantly discussed later on, of how PT manipulates his helpers.
Yeah.
How he makes each of them feel like they're the most important separately, to the point where it makes them willing to do things against the other parts of the crowd. Because Ira is prepping Susan, who's in a really fancy old looking wheelchair, which is kind of cool looking. And Susan is talking about how she is going to be steering PT, and Ira is just like not having it.
He doesn't buy it.
To the point where Susan starts acuity testing him.
Yes. She says like, hey, you remember that villa in Sicily? Remember the color of the roof? And Ira's like, you always acuity test me when you want to change the subject, which has to be one of the best lines ever.
So good. And you could tell he was just like, no, I'm over it. Especially because she's probably not guiding him as much as she thinks she is. And Ira can see that.
Yeah.
Not just because he's jealous of the relationship that they've had before, but because he's able to see it.
Correct.
Because he's connected with, you know, the Clone Club too, and has seen the things that they've had to deal with throughout the Neolution stuff that Susan maybe hasn't been able to be experienced with and exposed to.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. Anyway, he's super cute.
It's adorable.
Ira is like, right? Like his concern and his, you know, wish to take care of Susan is quite endearing.
Yes. And so with PT and Rachel, they're talking about, at one point, PT brings up the fact that Leaky was dead. And because they're talking about age and how long, like success and that sort of thing. And they're pointing out that, you know, Leaky died and was in that person's garage. What?
Yeah. Random clone's garage. Yeah.
He called her something and it was, I didn't write it down and I should have, but that's fine. Yeah. But basically, Rachel is reminded that PT knows things.
Right. Like, apparently she didn't think he knew about that. And she thought she took care of that. And that was like, oh, he may seem isolated, but he is quite aware of what's going on.
Yeah, he's not as isolated as she thinks, which you would think would be a warning, but apparently not.
Yeah. Like, how does he know all that stuff? I mean, there's a couple questions, you know, that don't even get tied up in this. Where, you know, same with Mrs. S has some source inside of Neolution. I don't even remember who it is. So I'm like, who is it? What?
Oh, good.
What
you'll learn. I'm assuming we learn at some point.
I think we learn, but yeah, it's like, you know, and I mean, I know it's not PT, or I'm pretty sure it's not PT, but he has his own, like, you know, source of information separate from Rachel, who can see things like, you know, Leaky having died. And yeah, I thought that was an interesting conversation because, you know, Rachel brings up the escaped subject.
Yes.
And why not eradicate him? You know,
that's
why capture it when you can eradicate? And PT just gets really mad. And he's like, you know, the subject is important to me and we can't always predict outcomes. And I thought
and that life is not
that's
perfect.
Interesting. Yeah, life is not perfect. And Rachel is like, oops, try not to cross that tripwire again.
She recognized a soft spark. Wow, this is so good. Such good radio. She recognizes a very tender part that PT gets affected by, and you can just see her entire like body language change where she got put in her place. Rachel is so used to being head B in charge. And the one that knows everything and the one that's able to manipulate and manage all these situations and is harshly put in her place first by talking about the mutation and just getting rid of it. And then having it pointed out that Leaky is dead and he knows and what happened basically. And so she is being manipulated again and guided the way that PT wants her to be.
Yeah. And it's interesting because her next scene, like PT says, you need to talk to your mother. I want to make sure, you know, she's on our side, you know, or at least on the same page with us, something like that. And so the next thing you see is like Susan.
Well, first Delphine comes in.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah.
We have a bit with Delphine. In earlier in the scene, there's a shot where Delphine's outside in the hallway waiting for some reason. And we're like, okay, that's weird. But then they call Delphine in and she has these samples and it's like everything will be revealed tonight. Like very epic because Delphine doesn't really know what's going on because they're very segmented and, you know, she's following instructions and she needs to get back to Geneva But she's being invited, taken under the wing, but only a little bit. And they need to get Cosima in line. Cosima's pushing those boundaries, and Delphine needs to take control over that, because that's Delphine's job, is to try and manage Cosima as much as possible.
That's right. And then you see like Rachel coming to Susan's room, which her room opens into that
beautiful greenhouse.
Oh, yeah.
My dream. And but I'd also need a gardener to take care of the greenhouse because otherwise it would always be dead. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. It's like, I don't know if I'd want that right outside my room. And Ira's leaving, you know, to leave them alone. But he looks at Rachel. He says, I hid the knives.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, great Ira line. You know?
Man, Ira had some great stuff in this episode. It was very like a low-key Ira Stan episode. And it's so good. So good.
Yeah. And so, you know, Susan and Rachel together, it's not going to be a very happy reunion. Susan's like, oh, the prodigal daughter returns. And, you know, I'm the only one you can trust here because I want my life's work to go on. And that's you. You're part of my work. I want it to go on long after I'm gone. And Rachel throws back in her face like, well, you didn't think I could accomplish this. You'd said they'd never respect a clone, you know. And one of the things I wanted to point out at the beginning when they have the previously on Orphan Black, it's one of the best previouslys ever. Like they really like got all the bits together to make this episode be in context. So they had shown the moment where Rachel is told, like, you know, they'll never have a clone at the head of Neolution, and now she is. And
Or at least thinks then, she is.
We know she's deluding herself more than a little bit. But when Susan says, you've shown great restraint in securing Kira Manning in our care, and that's when Rachel goes, you know, full Rachel and says, it's my care. Not you, our care. And she reaches over to Susan where she knows she has this wound from the knife.
Right, that she put in there. Yeah, that she put in her body.
She's like, I am at PT's right hand. And don't forget it, like corporate runs the science, mother.
Right.
So, she's feeling quite high on her horse, Rachel is.
Even after being shot down by PT previously for, you know, going above her place. She still has managed to have that feeling of, you know, hey, I'm in charge. This is what I'm doing. This is what's happening type of a mindset, and is turning around and pushing, literally pushing against Susan and against what she represents as the science side of things, because corporate is the important part in her mind.
So, yeah. No, it's really peak Rachel also at this episode. Then we're in Cosima's yurt, and Delphine comes in all like, hello, how are you? I just arrived. And Cosima is pissed, and she said, you know, Cosima just is finally, she's like, I saw you going up the steps. Oh, well, I had to drop off some samples. And she says, like, she's been collecting stool samples.
Yeah.
And was that a lie or true? Like, isn't Delphine the one, like, recruiting the surrogates? I mean, that's how they have the 1300. It's not clear.
It's very unclear, and it gets even more unclear, which is fine because that's it's not necessarily important. But I also was wondering, like, why stool samples?
Right.
And not
that doesn't seem to
blood.
Go.
But I'm not a sciencey person. Majorly?
Me neither.
So,
I only know what I read on the internet, which we know is the last, best resource for science.
It's always true.
But I will say that it is worth it to read the Orphan Black science recap for this episode, because this one is very sciencey.
It's very sciencey.
I have a few little bits I will throw in here, but I'll put a link in the show notes to that, because even the women who do it, you know, who are scientists, are like, yay, it's a Cosima episode because there's going to be lots of science.
Yes.
I don't even think we've talked about science the last episode or two, but yeah. So Cosima, says like, well, you told me to watch Aisha and here's what I found out. I got this journal and I've been looking at the, you know, her DNA. And what I see is he's trying to manipulate the cancer with gene therapy and he's not trying to cure it. And she also had the tooth from the bear, and she's sequenced that DNA as well. That comes a little bit later, but, basically, you know, they were looking at this thing. It's called LIN28A. It's a gene that, is supposed to manage stem cell growth, and that's great as long as it turns off at the appropriate time.
Right.
If it doesn't, then you get, you know, what's like a cancerous growth, like cells that grow when they're not supposed to. That is LIN28. I'll put that
which,
out there.
Which, as Cosima says, is the fountain. Like
the fountain.
She identifies it and is like, tell Westmoreland I found his fountain.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is...
Right.
It's very interesting that it's naturally occurring and affects so, like, it can cause so much harm mm-hmm. if it doesn't turn off, which is, like, interesting.
It is interesting, yeah. I have to say, you know, as you know and our listeners know, I watch a lot of detective shows too. And whenever the gene stuff comes on now, I'm like, oh yes, I know all about that.
Yes, I'm a professional.
I know about it from, I'm a professional genetics advisor to myself.
Because I've watched Black and Dunn, read the articles that other science have done. Yes.
Anyway, LIN28A has not come up yet in Silent Witness, which is my current binge, but I probably will not come out because they're looking for actual murderers, right. Like who murder on the spot and not people who kill you with gene therapy. anyway, yeah. So she does, when she sequences the quote unquote bear's DNA, she realizes he's also experimenting on someone, you know, at the house. She tells Delphine that, you know, and she shows Delphine that DNA sequence as well.
Yeah. And Delphine is telling Cosima that she's pushing too hard. That,
yes,
like, she needs to settle down, especially we saw Delphine have that interaction with PT and Rachel. And, like, they are making sure that she's watching Cosima. And Delphine's worried. She's stressed about what's going to happen to Cosima, someone that she is doing so much work for to protect her and the rest of the clones. And it's just like, you can't go further than we'd like you to, basically. Just like, be careful.
Yeah. Be careful. And then Cosima tells Delphine a thing she didn't know, which is Kira is being studied at Dyad, you know. And that is what's bringing this whole thing to a head right now, is that they've been studying Kira at Dyad, and now they're ready to implant 1,300 clones.
Yes.
And at that moment, the messenger comes to Cosima's yurt, says Delphine's requested for dinner. And Cosima says she's coming too. And she's like, he's like, you're not invited.
Right. Which
Grumpy Gus is grumpy.
Yes.
And that's when I think she says, tell PT I found his fountain. Like, hey, you better invite me because I know what you're doing up there.
I know what LIN28A is and I know what's going on. And you can just feel Delphine is just like, ugh, This is not what I wanted you to do. This is still pushing. You're pushing too hard. Stop pushing.
Yeah. And the pushing doesn't end because they go up to Westmoreland's house and the messenger's like, you know, you have to dress appropriately. And of course, they're not appropriately dressed for a fancy dinner in a Victorian style home.
It's a room that's basically full of 19th century clothing items.
It's lovely, yeah, right?
So much fun.
Didn't that like get you like, oh, I want to try on some of those things. And Cosima's like, dressed like this, you know,
frock that. Which frock I can imagine is a highly utilized GIF in Clone Club. I feel like that is used often. Just a guess, of course, once again. I don't know.
You're trying to avoid spoilers.
Stay away.
I would have been sad if you were spoiled on Frock That, because it's a super funny moment. And and the next thing you see is the messenger. The camera's pointed at the messenger. He's like,
This is not appropriate.
And they show Cofine, as they are known. Cosima and Delphine. Delphine looks beautiful in her Victorian dress. And Cosima's wearing a tuxedo.
Suits, like white tie and tails. Like, yes. She looks incredible. Yeah. Such a good outfit. Granted, there's no way in heck that there would be that suit tailored that perfectly for
such a tiny
such a
person.
Tiny person. But you know what? I'm okay. I'm going to put that veil of believability across it, because it was amazing.
Because that's one of the great like tableau of Orphan Black, is the two of them dressed appropriately for dinner. So then the dinner scene comes around, and you know, it's all sorts of weird.
Yeah.
All sorts of weird going. First of all, why does PT have to escort Delphine into the room separate from
Cosima? They pull Delphine away. And what I think it is it's once again, it's his way of manipulating and managing the ownership of the females in his life. He's
right, because they're all women at this dinner. Ira is not invited. He does not need to dress appropriately. No. It's just Susan, Delphine, Cosima, and Rachel.
Yeah. And he can't escort Rachel in because Rachel shows up later.
Makes an entrance, let's say.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Can't escort Susan because she's in the wheelchair. And isn't going to give Cosima the benefit of the power. And so by him, he gets to own Delphine, basically, away from Cosima by escorting her in. Like, that's his little way of digging against Cosima. Like, hey, she's mine. She's following my instructions and doing what I tell her to. I'm going to push her in.
Yeah, I'm in charge. Yep. I am in charge of all of you here.
Yes.
And they have a lot of little camera shots of various taxidermy things, which is like mucho creepy, you know, added layer of creepiness. And Cosima says, you have a lot of dead things in here. I mean, then they just, you know, they...
A battle for domination.
I'm a little shaky on it is a battle for domination. And, you know, not spoiler alert, because I will not spoil anything, just audience alert. I my notes at the end are a little bit like discombobulated because I had to take a little painkiller for a little health thing. And I asked Kathy, I said, you have to guide us through the end of this because I know it happens, but I really don't remember the order.
So PT is talking about Darwin and evolution and how he had to be a taxidermist and that's how he got on the Beagle. And Cosima's like, Darwin actually failed out of school. And you could tell that PT is just not happy with that. Because he's you know, created this persona of being, you know, I was best friends with Arwen and look at this with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, you know, we were buddies.
Yeah.
And Cosima isn't having any of that. And in exchange, PT asks about Cosima's parents. And I can't remember what her mom's name was, but the fact that her dad's name was Jean really tickled me in a way that was intriguing. They're like, his name is Jean.
That's G-E-N-E for anybody who is wondering if he's not named Gene like me. Like, not a blue gene, a DNA gene.
Which it was,
That's so funny. I didn't even like, that didn't even like stick with me. But yeah, he did like give her the.
Like, how are your parents?
You know, hey, how are your parents? And look, I mean, again, he's showing off his knowledge, like. You know, that he knows all about them. And she says, like, well, I haven't told them I'm sick or anything about the clones. Like, if I told them I was sick, I would break down and I would tell them about everything. Yeah. And they love me and they love each other. You know, like, I get the impression, sort of like, I mean, going totally off topic now, but like Hermione in Harry Potter. That she has these parents who are very loving parents, but they are kept in the dark. And because the two of them are like very close, they don't notice as much.
And
what's going on with their kid?
Also, they are professors. So they're, you know, educational in that side of things. But they also live on a houseboat, which I found very intriguing and says a lot about. Once again, it's this nature versus nurture thing. And it, I feel like that really helped guide Cosima to be the person that she is and the self identify, like how she presents herself and how, you know, with the dreads and the nerdy, like all of that is definitely built into how she was raised and who her parents are and what they, how they exist in their world, which was really a great little bit into Cosima, which I loved.
Yeah. No, we learned something about her we did not know before.
Yes. And now, too, we learn, and then Rachel makes her entrance. Ta-da!
Ta-da! She's up in the balcony above, and then she comes down. And yeah. And she knows she, I mean, is she seated at his right hand? I can't remember because she did say she's the right hand.
Right.
Person.
She is not.
She's at the left hand, right?
She is. So she, I think she's at the foot of the table.
Oh,
she's
is she at
the foot of the table.
Oh, it goes, okay. Like mom and dad.
Yeah. Susan is at her, at PT's left, and Delphine sits next to Susan, and Cosima is alone on the other side of the table, being isolated and pushed away, which before Rachel arrives, Cosima is drinking a lot of wine, which is how she gets extra sassy and says all the things about Darwin and everything, which I was just like, oh, that doesn't seem like the best choice. But, you know,
talk about pushing,
those
crossing
boundaries,
lines.
Yeah. But Rachel arrives and they start talking about, you know, the gene and Cosima's like showing off her knowledge that she discovered, and PT pushes it around and it's just like, you don't know what you think you know, kind of a feeling almost.
Yeah.
But this is also when she realizes that they've isolated that mutation in Kira. And that's why they want Kira, because they know that they can use it.
Yeah. Because, you know, again, learned this from Orphan Black science recap, not my own personal knowledge from studying genetics. But it, the major difference between Kira's mutation and what we see in Aisha and the bear, let's say, is self-regulating. It expresses tissue regeneration but keeps itself in check instead of tipping over to the cancerous, uncontrolled cell growth and division. So Kira's mutation helps her when she's in a car accident, but it doesn't kill her by making other things grow out of control.
Yes.
and that's what they want.
Yeah. And we learn a little bit. Basically, PT just kind of puts his foot down. It's just like, I'm done with this conversation. We're done with dinner, even though I don't think they ate anything.
I didn't see them eat anything, but it didn't look like it was going to be very appetizing.
Yeah, no, it was very, all very fancy, which is fine. So basically, Delphine has to go to Geneva, and that's a part that PT is just like, oh, you got to go. Like, if you want to catch your plane, whatever, it's time to go. Better leave while you can, which was very ominous. Because the entire time that Cosima is having these conversations, Delphine is just like giving her so many looks. Like when she gets her wine refilled, it's just like, really? And it just, it's all very, very much like,
So she wants to leave. Well, she doesn't really want to leave, but she has to go. She's expecting to go to Geneva, which we know that's where Felix and Adele are. So she doesn't say that to PT, but she does say that to Cosima.
Yes, when they get back to change, because Cosima,
they got to change out of their clothes for sure.
Cosima is just like, why are you leaving me? You should be here to support me. You should I need you here. I need you to do what I need you to do. Why are you leaving me again and not like not here to support me? And that's when Cosima learns that Delphine is going to Geneva to help support Felix and Adele. And like Delphine made this promise to protect her and all of them. And just like is bringing a call back to the moment that they had in that she dreamed about, where, you know, Delphine made the promise to protect her and Cosima made the promise to defy them. And like, this is where Delphine talks about how that is what PT does, is he divides women. So he brings these women in to battle against each other. So Cody and Susan together. And Delphine and Cosima and Rachel and everybody. And like, that is how he gets what he wants, by manipulating these women to compete against each other instead of him. Because they all could do, like, be finished with PT if they worked together. And instead, he's so busy keeping them against each other that they can't come around and support each other against him. And so Delphine's like, hey, you go back in there and you act like he succeeded. You act like he divided them, because this is this is what you can do. Like, this is how you can get through it. And so she's like, okay. And they have a very sweet moment together, which is just the whole thing. It was beautiful. It was so well done. It made me happy.
So
to a period of not happy time.
Very unhappy time.
We are having Mud is out with Salvador. Off to find that monster.
Yeah, and Salvador is like, well, we're going to kill him, you know. Mud is like, don't kill him. You're not supposed to. And he's like, dude, he's threatening us, or it's threatening us. They say it about it and him and say, we're totally going to kill it, you know.
Yeah.
Which doesn't work out so good for Salvador.
No, it doesn't, because they find a little hut where they saw some movement, and he's like, nope, he's not here. They're not here. No one's here. And then gets attacked by, we learned his name is Giannis. He comes up behind Salvador and basically murders him with a single swipe. He does get a shot off. And then he goes after Mud, who manages to talk a little bit, even though she's held by the throat against that little hut. And it's just like, hey, it's me. I'm here. It's me. It's Mud. It's, you know, and gets through to Giannis and he lets him go. Mm-hmm. And after that moment, we're cutting over to PT is talking to Susan and Kasima about Giannis and how they found him in a Latvian orphanage. They synthesized the gene and they put it into the Leda genome, and all of this information. But then they hear, it's getting bad. Someone says it's in the village now, and so they got to go on lockdown in the house now too.
Yeah, in the house, everybody into their rooms, and we're going to protect you.
Yeah, and so they basically lock Susan and Ira and Kasima into a room. And this is where Kasima learns a little bit more about what is going on with Kira and the surrogacy program, and the fact that they're using Kira's eggs, and
they're going to harvest her eggs,
which to impregnate 13,
that's a lot of eggs.
I think they're going to have to synthesize those eggs. There's no
really
that's hold on. What's because women create a certain number of.
Right. You have a certain number of eggs from the beginning. You don't grow anymore.
Okay. By the time of puberty, only about 300,000 remain. So I guess,
300,000.
Yeah, you're born with overkill. 1 to 2 billion.
Sorry. No. I didn't know these numbers, so I'm either. 1,300 sounded like a lot, but now it doesn't.
No, it really doesn't.
Many.
However, so most of the time, when someone is going to go through the process of IVF and they need to extract eggs. Usually 5 to 9 is about a good number, because of whatever. So the hormones that would be needed to get that many eggs, especially from a child, is really makes me scared and sad for Kira.
Yeah.
And that makes me angry. Which that's the feeling you're supposed to have.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, when I just heard this, I thought I was thinking more about the eventual outcome, that it were, 1,300 or some number close to that, babies born that were Kira's offspring.
And that is what Kasima latches onto, that these are Kira's children. They're Sarah's grandchildren. And why, Susan, are you okay with it? And Susan just reaffirms the fact that I can't control him, but I can steer him. And so Kasima's just I'm going to stop this. And as Ira goes to let Kasima out of the room, he goes, the roof is red. The red.
Oh, yeah.
And, so he's glitching, which is just oh, no.
Not now.
Ira. We need you, Ira. We need you to help be here for Susan.
And for everybody, he's more of a friend to the clones at this point.
Yeah. It was so emotional. But we then see that PT is going after Giannis. One of the security guys tries to hand PT a gun, and he's like, I don't need it, but I insist. It's like, okay. So he ends up handing the gun over, which I'm just this is not going to end well. Because obviously PT knows that he doesn't need the gun with Giannis, and we find out why, because Giannis went to the house and he went back to his cage. That is where his safe place was, which is where Kasima finds him. Oh, but Kasima runs into Mud first.
Yeah.
To learn and so learns a little bit more about the bear. She learns that his name is Giannis. She learns that Mud is the one that let him go, and that PT is not well, and that's why this is all happening. And it follows the music, the kind of creepy music, down into the basement.
Yes.
The soundtrack for that, this coming scene, was just so eerie and creepy and painful. And PT is hanging out, and Cosima is mad, like, you concentrated on this one gene, and that's not how bodies work. Like, it's never about one gene. Like, you're dying. And she points to PT and is like, this is your legacy. And he used to be healthy, just like Kira was healthy, and he broke him. And like, and so PT is like, okay, well, Cosima, you can deal with it. You know, do the ethical thing. And basically is forcing Cosima to make a decision. Like, okay, do the science, this thing that you're telling me to do, and kill him yourself. And so she pulls the gun and just like holding it, and Giannis is crying and she's crying. Yeah. And then she puts the gun down and is just like, no, you gave me life. I know you can take that away, but you can't take away my humanity.
Yes. Oh,
all of the chills.
So, oh yeah. Yeah. It's like, I defy you.
Yeah. In the only way that I can. And puts that gun down and then goes to try and comfort Giannis. And PT picks up the gun and shoots Giannis instead. And it's just like, the emotional toll of that journey was huge. And the way that Tatiana played it was beautiful. That heart-wrenching sob and cry that Cosima does is just, oh, I felt it in my gut. Felt it deep.
Oh. It was, yeah. I mean, and so basically she's locked into the cell now with this dead body.
And she's trapped.
She's traped. And PT, you know, sinks even lower in our estimation.
Yeah. And that's not all that happened in this episode.
No, there's a lot of other stuff, but I don't know if anything compares to like this. Like, there is the Mrs. S thread with Sarah and Kira. If you want to just like summarize really that quickly, I think we don't need to go to great detail.
No, but basically Kira and Sarah make a deal where they're going to if Kira helps Sarah try and figure out the feeling that Kira has, Sarah will tell her, you know, fancy things that she has learned and be a part of that whole, like, of the crew. And so at one point we come and Kira is talking about how Cosima is the sunfish and Helena is shark and Rachel is the elephant, and elephants are scared of mice. Which was really interesting.
Right. So those are code names. They're working on code names, and which I thought was really smart too.
Yes.
I don't have any code names in my life.
We'll work on that.
We will work on that. I would like have, well, you have a code name. You're the unicorn.
I am the unicorn.
Everybody knows that.
Or Mrs. Soup. Those are my two.
Or Mrs. Soup is a good names. Code name for you.
Yeah.
Too. All right. I don't have a code name. We will think of
one. Yes, we will. listeners, tell us what you think Jean's code name should be. but S comes home, and after talking with Scotty and Hell Wizard about like the whole timeline, she comes home and Kira's like, I'm going to be a hustler too.
I know.
And I was just like, oh no. Oh no.
Oh no.
But then the last little bit with S and Sarah and Kira, they're all snuggled together
so
in the bed.
Cute.
And
snuggled.
It's so sweet. just the love of that. And then S wakes up to the sound of a door downstairs, which is never a good sign in this show.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. And they apparently did not buy the house alert system that you suggested, right? For Secret Santa, and you couldn't be more right about that.
They need better security, obviously. So S grabs her rifle and goes downstairs, and it's Delphine sitting at the kitchen. And Delphine passes on that they know what they want from Kira, and that this exploitation of Kira is going to happen soon. And Delphine asks if they can count on the person if they can count on S's contact. And she's just like, I don't think so. And basically we're coming down to the wire. So once again, we've hit a high episode in the middle of the season with a lot of information, and the stakes are rising again. And we're really we're getting ready for the finale. You know, all of this prep work and the foundational stuff. We learned how terrible PT is. We learn how amazing Cosima and Delphine are together. We have a little bit more about Kira and Sarah, and where Kira is in her mental place. And it's just all, we're getting ready.
Yeah, no, that's true. And it's a very dense episode with a lot of information and a lot of action and a lot of reveals.
Yes. And getting ready for next week. Oh, my goodness.
Next week.
Four more episodes.
Oh, my God.
No, five. I can count.
There's five more episodes. Yes, you can count.
Yep. Five plus five is 10, not four.
Yeah, five more. We'll have a great episode next week. No spoiler alerts, but it is fun. Thank you, Kathy, for watching this with me, this one in particular, because it's so disturbing. I definitely need a friend to unpack it.
Well, I'm so glad I could be your friend for that. And thank you, listeners, for being our friends for this episode of SesterCast. You can find us online. We are at SesterCast.com, and we are on Twitter at SesterCast. Jean is at MacGeanie, and I am at Mrs. Soup. We are part of the Amazing Incomparable Network, where you can find a wide variety of pretty incredible shows. So go check those out as well. And we hope you'll hang out with us next week when we come back with another episode where we do episode 6 of season 5.